have even here in this church that we can be across the ocean and be able to participate with you. And each and every service we were able, not live, not during it because of the time difference, but we were able to hear every sermon and just to be able to participate with you wherever we are. Last week we, what made our stay an extra week was my nephew Seth. Many of you know Seth, raised in this church, and Seth, I was able to be in the wedding and pronounce his marriage and all of that. And what a great, great time! 10,000 feet altitude, we could hardly breathe, and I don't know what it is about an 85-year-old man that can outwalk a 58-year-old at 10,000 feet altitude. But Dad, take my hat off to you. Wow! I got up there anyway, what a great time it was. Family time and just tremendous time. I promise you soon that we're going to return to our book of Hebrews. We're studying through that book. And it won't be for a couple of weeks because I really want to bring to a fitting conclusion what we've started 3 years ago. I want to focus on how far we've come as a church in these 3 years. And I also want to talk about how far we have to go from here. Next week, we will literally bring to a conclusion our beyond measure covenants. That is the amount of money that each one of us has covenanted before God 3 years ago to be able to accomplish this building. Next week will be the last week to finish that 3 years. By conclusion, I don't mean it's the conclusion of our debt. You need to understand that. We will end up with little less than $500,000 debt. But when you think about just exactly how this came about, how that 3 years ago or more that we began to talk about this, and it took a lot of courage, quite frankly, to be able to step out and say, well, wait a minute. I remember doing the math. I remember the Sunday that we were going to announce how much had been covenanted, the covenants that were made by this people. I took the amount that I made a covenant on, and I times it, I think 100 or maybe 125, thinking if 125 people did what I could do, how much would we have? And quite frankly, it wasn't very much. And I was probably, my jaw probably dropped further than any of you did that Sunday when it was announced that $670,000 were pledged by you, by us, together. Well, it took a lot of courage. It's easier just to float along and not make a covenant or pledge or commitment. It's easier to do that. But it takes courage to be able to take a step and to stretch and to have faith. I want to talk to you this morning a little bit about courage. And I have four passages I want to read kind of back to back. You don't have to stand. I just want you to follow along as I read. Matthew chapter 9 is the first place I'm going to start. All of these stories concern courage and the amount of courage that it took for a person to change. Matthew chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. Getting into a boat, Jesus crossed over the sea and came to his own city. They brought to him a paralytic lying on a bed. Seeing their faith, Jesus said to the paralytic, "Take courage, son. Your sins are forgiven you." Go with me to chapter 14, Matthew's Gospel, and verse 22. Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he sent the crowds away. After he himself had sent the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid." Gospel of Mark, chapter 10 and verse 46. Mark 10 and verse 46. Then they came to Jericho. And as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a large crowd, a blind beggar named Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the road. When he heard that it was Jesus the Nazarene, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many were sternly telling him to be quiet, but he kept crying out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and said, "Call him here." So they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take courage, stand up, he is calling for you." And then one last passage in John chapter 16 and verse number 33. Our Lord's words, he says, "These things I have spoken to you, so that in me you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world." Now, in each of these references that I've read to us this morning, each time the two little words, "take courage," appears, it is in the imperative mood, meaning a command. It is not a suggestion. It is a forceful way of saying, step up to the plate, take courage, and change. The second observation that I want to make, just in looking briefly at these passages, in each story, the command was for them to change their attitude. To the disciples, he wanted them to turn from an attitude of fear to have faith. To the paralytic, he wanted the paralytic to move from the impossible realm to the realm of possibility. 3 years ago, we were faced with a series of great opportunities, brilliantly disguised as impossible situations. I heard some of you say it. "That's too much. We can't do that. We're going out on a limb. We can't borrow $1,000,002. I mean, look at our church budget. That's 3 times our church budget. How could we do such a thing in good faith?" Well, some of you, I know this to be true, some of you made a covenant not knowing exactly how you would fulfill that covenant. But you took courage and you stepped up. And you made whatever decision you made. Some of you were successful. Some of you were not. All kinds of things change. Some of you gave more than your covenant, I believe. Some of you couldn't finish the covenant. Some people in the last 3 years have moved away. I'm not sure if their covenants were met or not. But I'm saying to each of us who took that step, it was a step of courage. And our attitude had to change from we can't do this to we must do this. Which brings me to the most wonderful description of the importance of attitude that I've ever read. Some of you have this at your home posted somewhere. If you don't, I can get you a copy of it after you hear it. If you haven't heard it before, you'll want it. Chuck Swindoll said this years ago. He said, "The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than facts. It is more important than the past, than money, than circumstances, than failures, than success, than what other people think or say or do. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company, a church, a home, or an individual. The remarkable thing is we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for the day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is to play on the one string we have, and that is our attitude. I am convinced that life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. And so it is with you. We are in charge of our attitudes. Now, with that in mind, with the thing of the courage that it took to step up and to get this project going and all of the work that was done behind the scenes with the drawings and the meetings and the campaign, how it went, we were told that you'll be very fortunate if you arrive at your, if you arrive 10% short of your goal, because most places have that much of a fall off over the 3 years. Beloved, I just can't, once again, I'm so amazed and I'm impressed at how we are already here at our goal. We're not 10% short, we may be 10% over. Who knows where it's going to end? We won't know until the 20th when we have our bistro, when it will be announced over there just how much has come in. But I want us to think about this as we bring this race to a finish. And we printed these banners some time ago to keep it in your memory to finish well. And you have. You've done a wonderful, fantastic job. Now there are three things that I want to call us to remember as we approach next week and the following week. The first one is found in Hebrews chapter 12. And I want to borrow the writer of Hebrews' theme of the race, because it's a theme that goes throughout the Bible. The Christian life is a race. It is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's not a dash. It's a marathon. The number one thing I want to remind you of in order for us to finish well is to remember that we are running for the Lord. Chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, he says, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance." Agkos is the word encumbrance. It's really the root of the word oncology, tumor. He's saying, whatever it is that's holding you back, every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race, the agony that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. We are running for the Lord. This building was done for the Lord. This covenant that we pledged was pledged for the Lord. And we are going to continue to see God bless His church. But we must not forget that that is the why of all that we're doing. We're in this Christian life, in this race, building this church, paying for our building for the Lord. Our children and their children and their children will benefit from this work. And the second thing, not only are we running for the Lord, and that is our target, as our banner gospel mission says, to seek Christ above all else and proclaim His glorious gospel through our love for one another and our commitment to His church. But secondly, we are running for the Lord with the right heart attitude. You remember our theme? One heart, one mind, one passion, one covenant. And putting all that together, and just like Barry said, this wasn't one or two people participating. This was the entire body. And maybe you didn't have a lot financially to give to it. You gave a lot of prayer to it. I assure you that's the fact. And time and effort and support. And again, and having the right attitude for this project. One's point of view makes all the difference in the world. There's a famous story told of the days when Sir Christopher Wren was building St. Paul's Cathedral in London. That massive cathedral took 35 years to build. It made this man off the charts famous as an architect in England. On one occasion, as the construction of this cathedral was taking place, Sir Christopher Wren was making a tour of the progress. You know, oftentimes the architect, he does the planning and the engineering and gets all that done, but, you know, he doesn't get as much time as he would want to just get on site. But one day, Sir Christopher Wren was walking and taking a tour. He came upon a man at work and he asked this man, he said, What are you doing? And the man said, I'm cutting this stone to these dimensions. He came to a second man and he asked him what he was doing. And the man said, I'm working to make money because I'm in debt. He came to a third man at work and he asked him what he was doing. The man paused for a moment. He straightened himself up and he answered, I am helping Sir Christopher Wren build St. Paul's Cathedral. You see his point of view. He was participating in a work. He was proud of that work. Once again, the attitude, so important. A mother sent her child to pick a quart of raspberries. Reluctantly, he dragged himself to the berry patch. His afternoon was ruined for sure. Then a thought hit him. He would surprise his mother and pick 2 quarts of raspberries instead of one. Rather than drudgery his work, it now became a challenge. He enjoyed picking those raspberries so much that he said 50 years later, he still remembers that fresh in his mind. It was the change of attitude, the stepping up, the taking the courage, and having a different point of view on whatever it is, whether it's building a building, whether it's carving out time on the Lord's Day for God. I mean, will you think about that just for a minute? I mean, maybe most of you here are faithful in church each and every Lord's Day, but maybe there's some of you that are not. Why? One day, a couple of hours, one day, a week, a couple of hours to step up and take courage and do your part in the Lord's work. Is that too much for a pastor to ask his congregation? And I think you would say no. And I'm glad you're here. I'm not preaching to the choir. Maybe I am. But I guess it's when that attitude shifts and a person decides, you know what? I'm going because it's my church. And because I want to support the work of the gospel. And I want to participate in the body. And I'm honestly afraid I'll miss something if I'm not here. Wow. If a pastor had a congregation full of those kinds of people, wow, there'd be no stopping. There'd be no stopping the work. It's, once again, it comes down to the attitude. Go with me to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 16. If there is an attitude verse in the Bible, here it is. And it's, by the way, the shortest verse in the whole Bible. You say, wait a minute, I thought the shortest verse was Jesus wept because I memorized that. No, it's not. Not if you count the Greek letters. So to be real precise, verse 16 of chapter 5, 1 Thessalonians, is the shortest verse in the Bible. Here it is. And I wonder if this sizes up how you're feeling about a Christian and about being a church member. Rejoice always. That's a command. Pray without ceasing. That is also a command. In everything, give thanks. Be giving thanks. Present tense, once again, three commands back to back. Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. And in everything, give thanks. It doesn't say for everything, give thanks. It says in everything. Even when it's dark, stormy. Even though you walk through the valley of the shadow of death. In every situation, we can give God thanks. Because that illustrates our trust in who He is. And if He has allowed something to happen in our lives, and we're not trusting that He is in charge, we're not trusting Him at all. When we are not absorbed in ourselves, these things can work. But when we are absorbed in ourselves and our little kingdoms and our little plans for the future, disassociated with the body, then I don't think we can experience the rejoicing and the spirit and attitude and breath of prayer and to be a thankful person no matter what. So we're in this race for the Lord. We're running this race with the right heart attitude. And thirdly, we are running this race for the Lord until the race is over. Beloved, as I told you in the beginning, we have a sizable debt to take care of. And I am firmly, just as one person, I am firmly committed. I'm already excited for the day that we complete this next part. When we have a, whatever they call it, a note burning or whatever, and we get to pay Mr. Rufus off, and we can say, you know what, bank, stay away. We're finished. We're paid for. And that's our next part of this marathon. Those of you that are runners, I myself, of course, disqualify myself because I've done a 5K. That's not a marathon. You've done marathons. You know the importance of pacing yourself. You know that if you're going to run the full thing that, you know, at 12 miles, you better have some steam left. You know you got to be saving up to get that last hitting of the wall. I don't know, 3 or 4 miles before the finish. That's what I'm told. And just double that marathon and think running a 50-mile or a comrade's marathon. Just think about that. Well, that's what we're doing. Now, some of you have told me and you've asked me this question. And I love to be asked questions like this. You said, well, Pastor, we've been giving this amount for 3 years now. What if we should continue to give this amount? I said, Tom Branson is all the address you need. Do it as you do it for the Lord. And some of you have told me that you will do that. Some of you new folks that have joined us, maybe you want to participate in that. We just want to let you know that we will continue until this thing is paid for. And then we're going to throw the biggest party you've ever seen to celebrate finishing this marathon. I'm going to leave with you these words in 2 Timothy chapter 4. This is sort of the swan song, I guess, of the Apostle Paul. It's a time in his life where he knew his time was up, his work was done. And here's what he said, and I think that each of us will be able to say this. He says in verse 6, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. In the future, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have loved His appearing." Here is a man who didn't give up when he got tired. He gave up when the race was completed. And that is my prayer for you. I hope you're encouraged, excited. I hope that you're willing to stay in this thing for the next leg of this race to see just how long it's going to take us. We know on paper about how long it's going to take us, but something tells me that the way I've seen you these past 3 years, and even though in these 3 years we've lost some significant families, how could they move away from us? I have no idea. And to states like Wyoming and Oregon, that far away, I can't believe they would do that. But beloved, you're still continuing. And I'm proud. I'm just so proud. I want us to bow. As you listen to this quiet music, I want you to think about yourself personally. Have you taken the courage to stand up? Are you participating in the Lord's work on a regular basis by giving, by attending, by serving? If you haven't, why not? It takes courage to step up and commit. And the word commitment is not a word that people like today. They would rather be disconnected and unaccountable. Take courage. Get in the race, the Christian race. Run to win. And do so for the glory of God. And if something's holding you back, like a secret sin or a habit or something that you've been letting rule you, why not take courage and say, the time has come for me to stand up and to be the Christian that God's calling me to be. Why not do that in these quiet moments? Maybe you've never really surrendered your heart to Jesus. Why not in this quiet, open your heart and say, Jesus, I open my heart, my life, my soul to you. Save me. Change me. Help me to follow. You do that in this quiet.